Good afternoon. It's the first day of school in Anchorage. A beautiful day full of energy and excitement. I was packing my own kids off to school this morning. Everybody groggy because they've been staying up late all summer. You always plan to change those bedtimes, but you never seem to manage it. All the new school supplies, new clothes, new friends. It really is exciting. And this year, we also have, for the first time in many years, a new superintendent. Jim Browder is my guest today. He's taken over for Carol Como, and this is his first day of school with Anchorage School District. And we're just going to have a broad-ranging discussion today on hometown Anchorage, getting used to who Jim is and what his vision is for our schools. And I hope with your questions, what would you like to know from the superintendent of schools for Anchorage? What are your dreams, aspirations, complaints? This is your opportunity. So thanks for joining us. And thank you for being here on Hometown Alaska, Jim Browder.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So the one of the first things that people notice about you, I think, is that your accent is not... I guess we have a mixing bowl of accents here in Anchorage, but you're obviously from somewhere down south. And tell us a little bit about your life story.
I'm from South Charleston, West Virginia, born and raised there. Went to school there, high school, college in Charleston, and moved to Florida, followed my parents down there in the early 70s, started teaching and coaching. And very similar to Carol's career, I moved through the ranks through the years and ended up being the superintendent of schools for almost 8 years there in Lee County.
And so you worked up through one district that whole
yes,
time?
Yes. Wow. Yes. And Carol's career and my career really are real parallel. She was an elementary principal. I was a high school principal. Both were assistant superintendents. Both spent time in the district level, at the district level, doing a variety of jobs. But I've been in education my whole career, and I'm really proud to have stuck around for the long haul inside of public education.
And what was your subject as a teacher, and what did you coach?
I taught social studies, and I was certified in social studies and PE. I never taught PE, but I was a football, basketball, did a little swimming coaching, and track.
All right. No cross-country skiing there in Florida, huh?
Not much, no.
So from West Virginia to Florida and then Alaska, that's a pretty big jump. How have you found it? I guess you've been here in the warm months so far.
Right. Well, I was here for 4 weeks in the winter, February and March. Snowed every day. It was great. You know, just reminded me of when I was a young man and grew up in West Virginia. And actually, it's a real dry cold here, so it isn't like you're used to having with a lot of moisture in that air. Now, if you're downtown Anchorage, you get a little more of that. But I tell you, I had a great time when I was up here. I'm really looking forward to the activities this winter. And, you know, I'm like anybody else. I'll adjust.
Right. Tell me about the district that you came from. What are some of the similarities or differences between that district and Anchorage?
From a student standpoint, we were about 50-50, majority-minority, and we here are 54-46, minority versus majority. 82,000 versus approximately 50. 90-some languages spoken. Our demographics, very similar. We were the 40th largest district in the nation. We're the 94th. Anchorage and where I'm from, very similar in relation to how the district had grown through the last several years. Five of the years I was superintendent, we built 30 brand-new schools and 17 additions. During Carol's time, there was growth and a lot of construction and additions and such as that. So very similar in relation to we were growing, Anchorage was growing. And the good news for me is really a good group of teachers in both places and principals. So I come to a place that's well-versed and poised and ready to step to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the unique things or one of the unusual things about Anchorage is very few private schools. Most people are in the public school system, but with a wide variety of options within the public school system, which I've always thought is probably one reason why we don't have private schools, the options are available in the public system. Is that similar to your experience from where you're coming from?
Absolutely. We were one of the only districts in the state of Florida that was 100% choice. We were three areas in the district. We were a county school system, mm-hmm. county school systems in Florida. We had three zones inside of the district, and every parent in that zone had choices in relation to where they went. We provided transportation. We had a myriad of what we call alternative programs here that parents could choose from. I'm a proponent of choice. I believe that in order to accomplish that appropriately, we're going to have to be willing to transport our children around a little bit.
Well, that's a big topic. I want to get into that a little bit later. But just in finishing your biography or your resume, what was the cause for leaving your old job? Was it like, did you have a disagreement with the board or something, or did you decide to quit, or what happened?
What happened is board election occurred. Three new members coming in. They were interested in going back away from choice. And I had an option. I had applied in Las Vegas and was in the top three there, and the local college president offered me a job, and I decided to stay. Retrospect, hindsight, that was probably a mistake. But the reality is I chose to leave. I had done almost 8 years, and the district made huge academic gains in the 8 years I was there, and I thought it was time to let somebody else take it over. And what I end up doing is it didn't work out for me at the college. It really wasn't the right fit. And I started looking, and as I looked at Anchorage, as I read what was online and what Carol had done, it matched well with what I believe. The board is focused and wants to do what's right for our children, and it just seemed to be the right match. So I was willing to apply and come.
My guest today on Hometown Alaska is Jim Browder, the superintendent of schools, Anchorage School District. High school should be letting out about now. The elementary schools will be letting out within an hour. So if you're in the car going to pick up your kid, this is the guy you should be listening to. And we would like also to hear your questions. If you're in the car, of course, pull off before you call. The number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433 to get on the air with your questions with Superintendent Jim Browder. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to get in touch. I read those questions on the air, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. You have come in with some ideas. You didn't come in just as a caretaker, and you have already started talking about this Destination 2020 program that you want to implement, which is a set of goals, I guess, and
right.
Along with those goals, a way to get there. What's the Reader's Digest version of what Destination 2020 is all about?
Well, it's about assuring the parents in the community that by 2020, our youngsters will be 90% proficient in reading, writing, and math. Our attendance rate will be at 90%, and our attendance rate will be at 90%. And graduate, how we're going to graduate,
I think he's,
in a,
that's right.
Attendance. Attendance.
So graduation, 90%.
Graduation and mm-hmm. attendance.
Got you.
And what we plan to do is we're going to align our curriculum to the Common Core that the board adopted in the spring. And we're going to...
And I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
when we talk about Common Core, are we talking about the federal standards that were come up with the Department of Education out of Washington that different states are adopting?
Well, what they call them is the Common Core State Standards, and 45 of the 50 states have now adopted the one state just adopted the reading portion, the literacy portion, not the math portion. And what it does is it sequences the standards that every grade level should know in reading, writing, and math. And what we hope to do is align our instruction so that our children are proficient in reading, writing, math. And what we're going to also do is sequence our instruction in every subject area so that there's a real clear understanding that in order to go from this grade to this grade, you have to have this body of knowledge as a student. So we're aligning that. We have vocabulary lists with it. And we worked, our teachers worked this summer and put that real hard work together. And now we have it for every teacher in the system, no matter what grade level they are.
When you talk about 90% proficiency, we're talking about the standard-based assessments, that tests the state gives, where they have proficient, not proficient, advanced, and so on. Is that where are we now on that number? And is that a realistic goal? We went through it, No Child Left Behind, with an unrealistic goal. Everybody is at the top, but we now know that's not going to happen. Is 90% possible?
Absolutely, and it's Charles. It's really about a way of thinking. I believe that the youngsters in this community can compete with youngsters in any community in the nation. And what we've got to do is make sure that we're getting them the information they need to be able to do that. Our teachers can get us there. I have full confidence in what I've seen so far inside this system. And what we'll do is we'll make sure that we have a great teacher in every classroom. And what we're doing is we're going to use the SBAs, those standards-based assessments, as a tool inside of that to see how we're doing. Now, in 2016, most citizens don't know that the state of Alaska will change that those testing metrics and increase the rigor on those. So in 2016, there could be a bump in the road. But from my perspective, we have 4 years to prepare for that. So we'll have an advantage over everybody else in the state because we're really working at a higher level for the next 3 or 4 years until we get there. So bottom line is we're working to assure that every student can meet those realistic goals.
And I have a call from a listener on a slightly less high-flown topic, but Kat had a question about blue jeans for teachers. This is something that's running around town. Kat, go ahead.
Yeah, I heard that you had established a dress code for teachers that they couldn't wear blue jeans. Is that true?
That is absolutely not true. What I have said out loud, and actually that was the first question Charles asked me when I got in the studio.
Well, my wife's a teacher.
what I have said to principals and to any teacher group that I've spoken to is my expectation is that we dress professionally. And what that looks like is in the eye of the beholder, I guess. I have not said no blue jeans. I would not say that. It's a little different than weather-wise that we have to deal with. And some of the pants I have, the wind blows through it pretty good. So you'll probably see me in jeans sometimes too. But I believe that as a profession, if we want to be respected professionally, we need to give that professional look when we go into school to teach youngsters.
Yeah, I deal with teachers on a daily level basis, and I'm telling you that I think they are professional, and I'm glad to hear that you're not instituting a dress code. And thank you very much. You answered my question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. And if you have a question, the number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. It's Hometown Alaska. My guest is Superintendent Jim Browder. You were talking about the need to sequence the learning that kids are doing, making sure that you're aligned to standards, aligned to assessments. But you've also talked about schools of choice and reaching kids in different ways, because we know that every kid has different ways they learn and different speed that they learn. How do those two go together? One would think, just from hearing it, well, we're going to sequence, we're going to standardize that. We're going to present everything to every kid same day, same way. How do those two work together?
They absolutely work together without any difficulty. Number one, what we're talking about is assuring that the standards that you need to have as a kindergartner or as a second grader, those standards are the things that you're going to teach no matter if you're at Chugach Elementary or one of the ABC schools. The set of standards are what we're assuring that teachers teach youngsters.
That's the goal, essentially.
Yes, and it's not about everybody has to be in lockstep. That is not what we're talking about. The art of instruction is about the teacher. The science of instruction, getting everything in a body of work so that every teacher out there understands where we're going, is about the sequence. Is about what I'm talking about. I always talk about the science of instruction, and then the art is about the teacher. I couldn't, in my wildest dreams, tell a second grade teacher how to do it. But what I could do with second grade teachers is say, okay, tell me what we need to teach youngsters to be able to read at this level after they exit the second grade, and they tell me what they do. Well, that's what we're doing. We have taken the teachers in the system, whether it's senior English or second grade reading, and those groups have come in and told us what they need to do by the quarter, by the semester, by the year, standards-wise, that youngsters need to know in order to be proficient.
I am. So the goal is 90% proficiency by 2020, and when we're talking about standards, you're talking about, essentially, it's a minimum. You want 90%, almost everybody to get that.
Yes.
How do we avoid missing those kids who might be able to go much farther? I mean, how do we address the kids who might be more advanced in that?
Well, number one, you differentiate instruction. You assure that the youngsters that are not proficient, that are maybe in the seventh grade, have missed some of the reading cornerstones that you need to be a good reader. They don't have a mastery of phonics or phonemic awareness or decoding or vocabulary or informational text. What we do is provide reading programs for those youngsters that allow them to start at their level and improve. What we do with the youngster that's proficient and above is we allow them to stretch. You have to have the ability inside the system to get every youngster to stretch a minimum of 1 year annually, and for those that can do two or three, that's what we want. We want to provide opportunities for youngsters and families to have their children expand beyond 1 year's worth of learning. It's just the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
The anything above that is really real positive.
So you're kind of expecting the teacher to be able to teach at a bunch of different levels in that classroom, or more of a tracking concept where you take the smarter kids and put them over here and the less proficient kids and put them
some
over there.
Some of all that. In most elementary schools, you see that the teacher in that's a teacher might have three or four centers, and it gives them an opportunity to work with youngsters that might have fallen behind. It also gives them an ability to take a youngster that's stretching and really doing well to accelerate. As you get into the secondary schools, you do a little more homogeneous grouping in order to allow youngsters to have that focused instruction. I mentioned to you just a little bit before, we're bringing in what's called language. It's a reading program, and we can pretty much start at the third grade level and help a youngster that's struggling in a secondary school start to catch up. Mm-hmm. The way you do that is by practice. Reading is a learned skill that's about practice, and what we're doing is providing a program that will allow that. The youngsters that are on level have a program that we will utilize, and it will allow them to accelerate and continue to improve. What we've seen in the last several years, Charles, is our proficient learners have flattened as opposed to seeing growth. Well, what we've got to do is deal with both those groups, the ones that are not proficient and the ones that are proficient, so that we can assure a year's worth of growth every year for every student. Some youngsters that are not proficient might see 2 years. Some youngsters that are proficient might see 2 years. My attitude about that is, isn't it great? Because if you have a quality teacher in a classroom, they're going to get the best out of all the youngsters. And elementaries are a little bit different than secondaries. And what you have to have, this discussion is all about two people. It's about the teacher in the classroom and the principal. If you have a good principal and a good teacher, you're going to have accelerated learning for every child.
So while we're on this curriculum and instruction area, we've been through a big controversy about our math curriculum,
right?
Everyday math. As I understand, it's pretty highly regarded elsewhere in the country, and it has a pretty good alignment with the core curriculum. On the other hand, people were unhappy with it, and I think that some of that may have had to do with how it was being delivered, and were the teachers sufficiently trained in delivering it. What's your feeling about that everyday math? Time to get rid of it or to give it another try?
Well, the board has been very clear. They wanted us to look at that. We're in the process of doing that. We go through a process where we bring other textbooks in, analyze them, look at them. Everyday math is not a traditional math sequence of learning, and there's not a lot of fact sheet use and such as that. And I read the Council of Great City Schools review of that. Their review was that it's different and it doesn't have the support of the community. My experience has been is if the community doesn't support it, it's not going to be successful, because it's like any big issue, 50% support, 50% don't. It's a loser, because no matter what, people are critical of it. So what the board has said is they want us to look and find a more traditional math series that allows youngsters to have practice opportunities and fact sheets. We learned like that when we went to school.
Some of us did. I went to open optional school. So.
Well, so I was more traditional in relation to how that went. But the bottom line for me is, I think the community has to have confidence in whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. And if they have lost confidence in everyday math, it is not going to help us at all to hang on to it. And the board has been real clear about that. They want us to review it, and we started the process. Our dilemma right now is we can buy a more traditional a math series right now, but the following year, right now in America, the textbook companies are aligning their math books and adoptions based on the Common Core. Well, we're teaching math facts earlier in the Common Core than we did before. So if we buy one that has not had the opportunity to align now, then we're out of sequence with
you're
the textbook.
Have to replace it. It's like buying a computer right before
exactly.
It goes obsolete. Right.
So what we're doing is looking at that, anticipating that, and trying to make a thoughtful decision. We might even do some things a little different with supplemental materials next year to get the company that we choose to have the ability to get that book finalized and ready to go. We don't want to go through it in another 3 years because we make a hasty decision now.
Now, do the schools of choice, are they free to use other materials, other curriculums based on whatever philosophy they're doing there?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're going to work through any of those issues. I know we use Saxon in some schools. I used Saxon in 1988 in a high school that I opened for grades 9 through 12. I really liked it. What I want to make sure of is that the teachers understand that we're looking at the standards. Here's the sequence. Here's the vocabulary that goes with it. Here's the pacing guide behind it. You can use it as a, oh, by the way, I'm behind, or golly, I'm way ahead. Mm-hmm. And what our goal is to assure that every student in every school gets a quality experience, and that we can bank on as a community, they have this set of abilities when they come out.
Mm-hmm. Now, the transportation issue is always a big one for these schools of choice, and I've just from my history here, I know that the reason that came about was when the first ones were started, the only way to get them through the board was say, hey, we'll drive our own kids.
Right.
One of the impacts of that, though, is people with more means, more ability to drive their kids around are going to be able to use those schools, whereas others who are maybe less fortunate in terms of their economic status will maybe be more likely to use the neighborhood school. Is there a need for transportation to these schools to make it more fair and to add to that opportunity?
Absolutely. If you're going to do choice and make it a level playing field, there has to be some ability for all youngsters to access programs. The taxpayers in this community have been very, very good to the school district. We have an amount of money that we have to operate inside of. In order to do that and do it right, we might have to make a choice over here not to do this in order to provide that transportation. So the board is poised and ready to have those real difficult discussions. And I told them when I interviewed in January, we can build a choice program that'll be second to none. One of the things that would be a part of that is transportation, because every youngster should deserve an opportunity to go to a real high-quality school. The other thing is, Charles, we're going to have to duplicate and triplicate some of those schools, mm-hmm. because if they're really outstanding schools, why wouldn't we move them around the community to minimize some of that transportation?
Huge waiting list to get in at this point. Yeah.
We shouldn't. I'm delighted with the waiting list, but to know that there's 400 parents that are unhappy or disappointed that their children didn't get in, mm-hmm. we need to make sure that those options are available.
Well, what kind of numbers are we talking about? Because it seems like if you've got school buses running every which way across town to get to all these schools of choice, that's going to be extremely expensive.
Well, we would have to map out a strategy in relation to how we do that. We would have to probably look to say, okay, on this side of the community, these are the options. On this side of the community, these are the options. Maybe even in three. Mm-hmm. But what you have to be willing to do is duplicate or triplicate those programs so that every youngster has an opportunity to go to a high-quality school. My experience has been when you take one that's like an ABC school that didn't have any other ABC schools and you duplicate it, you double the size of youngsters, the number of youngsters that get the opportunity to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not diminishing return. You move one here and here, and now you still have the same number. My experience has been you double or triple the availability of seats for those programs, and consequently, there are more parents that are happy about their choices.
Now, I always hear a little hostility to the school choice concept because people have the impression that it costs more. And also, if there's a one best way of doing things, why not do it the same way everywhere? And I guess, is there a cost increment for having school choice? I guess it would be if you're driving them around.
The cost, by and large, is about transportation.
Mm-hmm.
The way we transport here and the way it's laid out, there will be an additional cost. Will it be exorbitant? Absolutely not. Will it be manageable based on what I've seen so far inside this community? Yes, it will. And what we've got to do is figure out what are the star programs that are out there and what does everybody want access to? And then we have to plan on how that's going to – that can't happen in the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. That has to be orchestrated. You have to go to the communities. You have to talk. I'll be doing a roadshow around that, the board and myself, as we start that, so that parents get a sense of, okay, this does make sense, or, oh my gosh, Jim, have you thought of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my experience is the more input I get, the more wisdom I have, because it's not about me, it's about us, and collecting that information in makes it better for all of us to make a logical decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you alluded to the budget, and I think in the second half we'll probably have a lot more to say about that, but I think there's an impression out there that we're paying a lot and that the school budget has gone up over the years. And yet, in this last year, we've seen some layoffs. We've seen some programs or some teachers, you know, going, a reduction in some foreign language programs. And I just, I don't know if it's true, but I heard some reduction in number of labs for science in some of the high schools. Where are we budgetarily? I mean, are we between a rock and a hard place?
Day before yesterday, the mayor kind of laid out, okay, look, this is where the city is in relation to next year. And I loved his, we can't kick this can down the road. The bottom line is, based on contract obligations, on July 1st, I had a $21 million shortfall. Now, how we manage that
out of a budget of
about $600 million,
mm-hmm.
okay, $500 million. So a $21 million deficit to start. 85% of our money is in people. So most folks already are saying, okay, what's this new guy going to cut? There are questions around. Well, you're going to cut this. You're going to cut that. Number one, if we're flat funded, there's a $21 million deficit. If you add that to the cities, we're at $50 million in this community this next year if we're flat funded. Okay, number one, I hope any legislator out there is listening that's listening would at least take the opportunity to say, okay, look, let's look at this holistically. Let's try to figure out what it takes to educate our children. Whatever the dollar amount is that we're given, we're going to operate inside of that. And the product for the citizens in this community, I can tell you, we're going to give you as good a product as you'll get anywhere in the country. And we'll look at every stone in relation to where the dollars are and what we can do to make that happen. We're already making reductions inside the district level to assure that the money has to be in schools first. They have to be in classrooms first. And everybody else that's not in a classroom, we're going to look at everything. And the board has been real clear about that. We want to make sure our class sizes are reasonable. We want to make sure that we're doing what's right for children. So my charge is to do that. The budget is going to be an issue, and we'll deal with it. Whatever we can get there from here, it might not be as pleasant as everybody wants, but the bottom line is whatever dollars we're given, we'll make work and we'll educate kids really well.
I'm speaking with Superintendent of Schools Jim Browder this afternoon in Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth. We're going to have a short break, and when we come back, I'll give the phone numbers for you to get on the air and ask your questions. I'm enjoying a one-on-one here, but I'm sure folks out there have something to put into the conversation too. So stay with us. We'll be right back in a moment with Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website, alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA FM 91.1.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guest today is Jim Browder, Superintendent of Schools in Anchorage, and we've been having a fascinating discussion for this first day of school. I guess most of the high school kids are out now, and pretty soon the elementary kids are going to be leaving, and we've got a lot of stuff coming up in our school district. We've got contract negotiations coming up for the teachers. We've got a big budget deficit. We've got disappointing graduation rates and some test scores that aren't that great. We've also got some amazing kids who are doing some extraordinary stuff and going to top colleges. And we've also got some really exciting goals that the superintendent's talking about. So plenty to discuss today. And right now I'd like to take a call from Mike, who's calling from Anchorage with a comment or a question about bullying. Mike?
Hi. Jim, I was wondering what your thoughts are about providing a comfortable learning environment by teaching in advance about healthy relating so that bullying is eliminated or at least greatly reduced.
Well, one of the things that drew me to this district was when I looked at the website and discovered that they were doing social emotional learning, a concept that teaches youngsters from kindergarten on some of those skills that you need to be able to deal with somebody like that and to hopefully negate some of that behavior. I'm pretty much a no-nonsense person in relation to behavior inside of schools, and it's my hope that our teachers and our principals and our guidance folks have the skills to be able to manage that. As parents, I hope that parents are actively involved in the schools that their children attend. And if there's something going on, we need to get it early as opposed to late. There's never anything that's too small of a problem from my perspective. One of the things I was telling Charles before, I was a high school principal for 18 years. I took seriously a concern from a student or parent that somebody was bullying or messing with their child. What we have to do is assure a safe and orderly environment, and we'll be looking at a variety of things to assure that that's happening.
Could you say a little bit more about that social-emotional learning? Is that provided to every classroom?
That's what we've really focused on doing is implementing that across every area in the curriculum. We have a new executive director that's working on that right now, Leslie Vanderhave, that will be working to assure that those skills are integrated in every teacher's classroom from kindergarten to the 12th grade. I have a lot of really positive things going on around that, and I think as we move forward, you'll see significant improvements in regard to positive behavior support system inside the schools.
Could you say a little bit more about what the content of that social-emotional teaching is?
It's about self-awareness. It's about self-respect. It's about self-controlling yourself and assuring that you as a student have those skills to understand what you should and shouldn't do. Where in most places they call some of those things character education. We have to teach youngsters how to play well together. Probably the biggest change in what employers are looking for today as opposed to when I was a young man, they want to know, do you have the ability to work in groups? Well, that's the kind of thing that we're doing, assuring that youngsters understand their responsibility to not be aggressive, to do the things that they need to be good citizens, and those character type traits that we want youngsters to be taught in school and at home.
All right. Good questions, Mike.
Now,
thanks for your call.
I imagine there's no standardized test for how well the kids absorb this content.
Yeah.
No, there
so
isn't.
How actually is it measured? And also, are the teachers getting specific training in how to teach this and how to blend it into the curriculum?
In my mind, it would be measured inside of each individual school. And as a district, we survey our youngsters annually and collect data around that. And the professional development training is a huge component of that. Leslie, the lady I spoke about earlier, what her responsibility is to make sure that the social-emotional characteristics are integrated into the Common Core standards so that it's just a part of how we teach youngsters and how we teach them to behave in relation to themselves and others.
Thanks, Mike. It was a good question. We're going to move on.
Has already been implemented in the last several years? Is there a place where we can review them?
If you go online, you'll be able to look at social-emotional learning or call Leslie Vandergaw. I said her name wrong the first time, at the district level, and you'll be able to get all the information you need.
Good call, Mike. We're going to move on. For those listeners who want to ask your own question, the number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433 to get on the air. Outside of Anchorage, toll free, 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to get on, especially if you're at work and you can't call. hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we have a website. If you go to alaskapublic.org, you can find out about today's show, find out about my guest, Superintendent Jim Browder, information about the Common Core standards and curriculum that's been adopted by the school district, a bunch of back-to-school information, and ways to get in touch and get on the show. You know, we were talking about the social-emotional learning aspect, and something that I've observed, I have four children all gone through the school district,
right,
is that, you know, our school system has become very female. Nothing wrong with that, except that boys don't always have a lot of male role models in the school. And as I've volunteered in my kids' classes, gosh, I found it's amazing how the little boys will come around and really try to bond with you and really try to respond to you as a male and It's great, but it also makes me think, are we missing out on something, especially as we see an achievement gap that's growing where girls are doing better than boys in school. Is that something you want to address, or do you see a way to address that?
Absolutely. Actually, we have a couple of, at least one program in our Indian education program that addresses young men and the fact that they need more role models. They are academically falling behind. And in a variety of our demographics, you see that boys are doing a lot worse than girls. And one of the things that I've done in the past is I've had some all-boy classrooms in elementary and middle schools to allow young men to be able to learn to work together as a group. And those are the kind of opportunities that we have to look at in order to address the problem of single-family homes, and or there's two members in the family and both of them work a lot. The mentorship and the other things that occur inside of a school kind of draw them to it. Those activities in elementary, middle, and high schools that and athletics that allow young men to kind of get back on track. But Charles, you've identified probably one of the two major issues in public education today, how to deal with those young men that are being left out of a variety of things because there's that role model isn't at home. Mm-hmm. So we as a community have to volunteer more. We have to provide those support services for young men and a lot of young women in order to assure that they have a fair chance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I never have more fun than when I volunteer in my kid's school. It's sort of the best part of the day. It's sort of a little secret. Everybody thinks, oh, you're so virtuous for doing that. But actually, it's great
Real
fun.
Real rewarding.
Susan has a comment or question about the middle school bell schedule. Susan?
Hi. I was wondering, I have a middle schooler at Romig, and I was wondering what the thought was behind changing from the blocking schedule that was historically what they've had to just a regular everyday bell schedule where they have the same class every day.
Right. Actually, I talked to the principal, and he mentioned that he was doing that. And to be quite honest with you, I don't remember exactly what he said. I would encourage you to call the principal of the school. Finn would be more than happy to discuss that. I think it had to do with making, because of the length of time between today and 2 days down the road, youngsters were not as prepared and ready to go as they needed to be. But what I would recommend is that you talk to the principal of the school about that.
But I did, and we were told that it came from the superintendent's office.
It did.
Apparently not. Uh-huh.
Apparently not. I have no idea. He mentioned it in a conversation that I had that his was different than West High that I think does. It might have been that they were trying to mirror West High. I don't think West High does a block schedule, do they?
I think they do.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever the reason he said, to be honest with you, I don't remember. And I can tell you right now, it positively did not come from the superintendent of schools. I was a block school when it wasn't popular 18 years ago.
Susan, if you want to send me an email at...
Or email me, too.
Or email the superintendent. Mine is hometown@alaskapublic.org. I'll make sure to forward that to the superintendent. We'll get an answer to it. Let me follow up on that a little bit. One of the controversies we've had over the years is that with our busing schedules, the teenagers, the high schoolers, go to school very early in the morning, and the elementary kids much later. And a lot of people said that's backwards because we know that sleep cycles, the natural sleep mm-hmm. cycles for teens, are that they really are more night birds.
Right.
And they're maybe not being that productive at 7:30 in the morning. Do you want to look at that again? I think it was a cost issue.
Interestingly enough, in the community I'm from, I was a high school principal, and there was a big discussion around that. And they decided to change the bell schedules. It lasted 1 year. Because, number one, youngsters, the older youngsters tend to work. They tend to be real active. They didn't like the late release as opposed to the later start. I know this community's been through that discussion. I would caution that it might seem like it's just easier to do, you know, more logical to do late start for older youngsters. But when you look at everything that it impacts the business community too, because a lot of businesses depend on those youngsters to get to work by a certain time. Mm-hmm. And not that work should drive anything, but some families depend on those youngsters that work. I would say that I'm willing to look at anything. The board has expressed an interest in at least having the discussion. It will change who goes first. You know, if you move the high school youngsters later, does that mean you move the whole schedule 1 hour? That's a simple move. If the community's willing to have elementary kids start another hour later, well, there's daycare involved. There's mm-hmm. This is about dominoes. If you knock this one over, it knocks a lot of other things over. So as we have the discussion, we have to be real thoughtful about what are the cause and effect issues inside of that one. We lasted 1 year. We got a new superintendent. That was me. And the issue that got me to that position was the issue around starting high school kids later. If you have late buses and they're missing an AP calculus class first period, parents get really excited about that. Mm-hmm. So there are more academic ramifications based on transportation for high school youngsters as opposed to younger. I'm willing to move that schedule, but it has an effect on everybody.
Big discussion. Yeah. Let's go to Julia, who's calling from Girdwood about their school down there. Julia?
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. Thanks for having me. Just to let you know a little bit about us, we're huge supporters of Girdwood School District and Anchorage School District in general. We have a second grader and a third grader at the Girdwood K-8. My husband is a 7th and 8th grade science teacher at Hanshu Middle School. He's getting his master's in educational administration to become a principal at UAS right now. So we're very involved with the school district, and we're really excited to have you here, Jim, to kind of spearhead a lot of the things that we're interested in. My question is, I know there was a planning grant to kind of expand Girdwood Schools and look at how we could accommodate what we're seeing as a major influx of new enrollments here in Girdwood. We just had a really big issue with that in the last few days where class sizes were kind of shifting around a little bit. And, you know, we're a very community-oriented parent base here, so we're excited to work with the teachers and get the best for our kids. But I'm wondering, are there any plans to look at a charter school here so that we could have high school education so we didn't have to bus our kids? Because when you're talking about bus schedules, our kids have to get up at 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning to get to Anchorage by the time school starts.
Well, right now, the master plan for Girdwood, and incidentally, I love that little school. I've been there a number of times. I love the Girdwood community. What the master plan is right now is it would stay a K-8 school. There's the planning grant to look at that. I think that's been developed now. We're waiting to get the master plan so we can move it to the assembly and get approval for that. As you said, the community there is really involved in the school, and it's a real positive learning atmosphere. Whether or not we would expand that to 912, interestingly enough, it's a question that I ask. And my question was around how many high school youngsters are in that community. And I think the number I got was like there's around 50 youngsters there that would be ready to go 9, 10, 11, and 12. Some of the issues around that center about the quality of, especially in those higher level courses, math and science. Would we have the capacity, and could we find the folks to deliver that kind of real quality experience for the students in the Girdwood community? I'm willing to look and talk about anything inside of that. I have some experience in looking at things of that nature, but it gets down to, can you really provide that quality experience if you only have 12 youngsters in the 9th grade class? And how does that look? And are you doing combined classes? It gets to be about the quality of education as opposed to the
location.
The location of the school and the travel time to the other high school, and then they have the whole high school experience. That's a discussion I'm willing to have, but there's some other external things there that, as a high school principal, I'm not sure is the best thing for a group of high school youngsters that would only be 50 strong, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Well, are we seeing that the enrollment is going up? Because I know, you know, right now we're looking at, second, third, and fourth grade classes that are rounding at 25.
Right. No, as the population grows there, and I'm sure it will, it's a discussion downstream that I'm sure we'll have, and we'll have an opportunity to look at it. Right now, based on just what I know in a short period of time, I'm not sure that would be in the best interest of those 50 high school youngsters to be in a real, real small situation at Girdwood.
Understood. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Julia. We have a few minutes left. There may be time for one call or an email if there are listeners who have pressing matters on their mind. 550-8433 within Anchorage, or email hometown@alaskapublic.org. I guess we're coming into a year when we'll be negotiating the teacher's contract, and that's been a really tough issue in this community in the past, going all the way back to the 70s. And in this time of apparently tight funding, how do you see that negotiation? Is it a time to get the teachers to hold the line?
Absolutely not. I think what we need to do is we need to go into this negotiations realistic from both sides. I think that it's real clear to everybody in our community that times are different than they were 3 or 4 years ago. So we'll look at the I believe in being collaborative. I believe in being real open and transparent. We'll look at the money that's available. We'll look at it in terms of how that rolls out, and we'll make decisions based on what's best for everybody in the community. My experience is that if you are open and transparent, logical people make logical decisions. Our teachers and our other support organizations are really real positive in relation to doing what's right for children. We'll work through it. I don't anticipate any large bumps along the way. And I really believe that where we'll end up is in a position where all of us have all the same information and we agree in relation to where we've got to go, and we do what's right for students as we proceed.
And we have a caller from Willow. Kelly, what's your question? Oh, it sounds like we lost her. Do you see that we have a sufficient pool of applicants when you're hiring for teachers and for administrators? I was recently involved in the selection of a new administrator for my kid's school, and wow, it didn't seem like there were that many applicants. Right. So I didn't know if there was an issue there.
Well, anytime you're in a position like we are in Anchorage, the distance between where the large pools of teachers are and principals are is substantially away from us. I think what this district has done an excellent job of is trying to train people inside the system to step up and do those administrative things. From a teacher pool perspective, we hire about 30% of our teachers from the outside. And that pool is smaller than you would want just because of the distance between where they're from and coming here. Bottom line is we need to do a much better job of collaborating and working with UAA and UPU to assure that the candidates coming out of those colleges of education are ready to take on the high level intensity of being a teacher in our system. And as I said to you before we started, I believe what we need is in our community. We just have to go out there and make sure we're doing our part to find them.
I think we have time for one more quick call, going to Peggy in Anchorage.
Hi, this is Peggy Robinson.
Oh, hi, Peggy Robinson. Hey.
Hi. That's just a quick comment. I was on the Anchorage School Board for 9 years, and I've been off for 10 years now. And a number of the topics that have just been asked about recently were ones that, through my time on the board, that we did spend, you know, time exploring. And I've, you know, encouraged people to go back and look at a lot of the history and the records and the research that was done. Some of it's still very apropos for today. Some of it may have changed some, but that there's a lot of prior work that's been done on some of these issues.
Well, it struck me that that's an interesting thing about Jim coming in after Carol Como being superintendent for 12 years and spending an entire career here. On the one hand, she had all this knowledge. On the other hand, sometimes somebody coming in new with a fresh look can try something that's already been tried, and by golly, it works the second time. Jim, what is it like following in her footsteps and sort of figuring out what you can do new and all that? It's got to be a challenge.
It is absolutely a challenge. And Peggy, I appreciate you saying look at the history, because the history tells us a lot of things. Carol wears a size 28, in my opinion. I wear a size 13, so I'm kind of sloshing around in her shoes. She did an exemplary job and loved this community and the children in it. What I bring and what she taught me in my transition period is you look to the student first. I've always tried to do that, and that's what I'll try to do. Yes, we do have some really good alternatives for families, but we've got to be willing to expand that and provide the transportation. If Carol could have done anything differently quickly, I'm sure she would put transportation in the loop. As I look at what we're doing academically, it was interesting that assessment person before me took Carol some results, and she came down and she said, I wanted to show you these results in reading. And I looked at her and I said, we need a secondary reading program. She said, that's interesting. That's what Carol just said. Hmm. So what I think I bring is just a fresh set of eyes. I'm willing to look at things a little differently. And Carol did, as I said 1,000 times, an exemplary job. She's a high quality person, and I'm just fortunate to have inherited what the real good work she's done. My goal is to take all that real good work and try to improve it.
Peggy, did you have, in very short time we have available, do you have any particular issues you want to make sure that get picked up on?
Well, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying just look at what was done, but what was studied. You know, changing school starting times was an issue that, you know, I brought up and we worked on and looked at a couple different times. It didn't happen for various reasons. What I'm suggesting is that there was work and study done on some issues that were not implemented, but the questions are still around. And, you know, it gets brought up again. And so, you know, maybe that something was not implemented at one point, but that doesn't mean that some of the work that was done before wasn't good work to at least start on.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Peggy. We're going to have to wrap it up there because we're running out of time, but I appreciate your call. And to Ken, who's been holding, please send me an email and I'll forward it to the superintendent. I'm sorry we don't have time to get you on the air. Our email here is hometown@alaskapublic.org, and I'm sure he'll be interested in hearing any other questions that come up. It's been a great hour. I really want to thank you, Jim Browder, for being my guest, Superintendent of Schools for Anchorage.
Thanks, Charles. I appreciate the opportunity. To the citizens out there, email or call. I'll be more than happy to talk to you about any issue you have.
All right. So my name is Charles Wolforth. I'll be your host again next week on Hometown with Anchorage Police Chief Mark Mew. We're going to be talking about the use of deadly force in Anchorage, which has been such a big issue this summer. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can also join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yack is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Speck is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.